Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let me be the first to say good morning to you from 93.7 The Fan. I'm Matt Cole. This is the early morning show here till about 5:40 before the Fan Morning Show pre-show, live and local from our Green Tree Studios. It's the start of a new day, and it's brought to you by Greenbrier Treatment Center, 503 on a Monday morning, and plenty of sports action this weekend to react to, some things to talk about throughout the show today before my time is up. Although there were no Steelers, there was no Pitt. Still a lot going on in the sports world, and I'll go over all of that, particularly some of the things that I saw from the NFL this past weekend that's coming up on the early morning show, as well as a recap of last night's action in the NFL. But I wanted to start here today, which is probably going to be the timely thing, the newsy thing here on this Monday morning, and that is the Pittsburgh Pirates and announcing a new general manager, Ben Cherington. Expected to be announced from PNC Park at noon today. And with Ben Cherington, I don't know, I have mixed emotions because I think his career as an executive has been kind of a mixed bag. He's had some really high swings and some really low swings, and I'm talking particularly about his time in Boston as the general manager of the Red Sox, of course. The high is that he brought a World Series to Boston after they had won 69 games the year before. That is something that's very significant and something that you can't look past. I mean, that happened. Those were results-based. That was bringing a championship to a franchise and completely turning it around. But the low and the other side of what he did in Boston was that he signed off on some ridiculous contracts on his way out, including Pablo Sandoval's, the Panda's, 5-year $95 million disaster. And he's also never worked with a budget and a payroll that's even close to what the Pirates are working with. I mean, let's be honest about that. I don't know if a lot of executives around baseball have ever worked with a budget and a payroll quite like the Pirates, but regardless, that he doesn't have experience in doing that. His ties to Neil Huntington, they make me kind of nervous as well. It's another guy with ties to Mark Shapiro and Amherst College, New Hampshire, and there's all of that stuff. But willing to think that he's his own guy with his own thoughts here. I know that there are connections between Huntington and Cherington, and I know they've been linked in the past, but I'm willing to believe that Cherington will bring new thoughts, new ideas, and he won't fall into the same footsteps as Neil Huntington, and especially if he saw what Huntington did here, especially over the last 2 or 3 years. But I wonder more now in bringing in Ben Cherington, and they'll have an announcement again today at noon, and I guess it'll be, I don't know, celebratory. I don't know if I'd go that far, but at least some direction for this franchise, finally, and getting a guy into a position to where we can move forward with this franchise here and get started with the offseason. But I wonder more about what his first orders of business are going to be and really how he views this roster. If it were me, I would try to tear this thing down to the studs even further. I would be aggressive in shipping out if I can, and who knows if this can happen. But if I can, Chris Archer, and definitely this can happen, Starling Marte, the two big money guys for a team that isn't going to contend next year. It's just not. And then it's about building up a rotation, and I think it's then about building up a bullpen, now devoid of both Jameson Taillon for next year and Felipe Vasquez. We all know what happened there. And building up a farm system with a new development strategy. We've talked, you've heard that maybe all the time of how the farm system and how they have developed these guys coming through the system has been flawed. And when they get to the major leagues, they're not reaching their full potential or they're struggling at the major league level. I don't know how you go about fixing that. Maybe that's just a staff thing or just relaying what the strategy should be there, but that's got to change as well. But if it were me and if I was Ben Cherington, I think that I would just continue to tear this thing down and get as much value from these guys as I can in being Archer and in Marte, and build upon your young pieces that are in place. The Brian Reynolds, the Kevin Newmans, even the Josh Bells, although, I don't know, maybe you could trade him as well. I'm cautiously optimistic about Ben Cherington coming in here. He's most likely to be aggressive, which I don't mind. I think that the Pirates might need a guy who comes in and is aggressive with this roster and is aggressive in moving things in the right direction and maybe shaking them up a little bit. Maybe that's exactly what this organization needs. And again, his history is a lot of highs and a lot of lows. And so I'm optimistic about what he can do, but very, very cautiously so. Let me move on to this before I end this first segment here on the early morning show. Just to wrap up kind of the whole scenario from Thursday night. I know this is days old, but I just to go over the Miles Garrett fallout and to move it forward as well and to talk about what happens now. And just wrapping up the situation quickly, there were some crowds or some lines of thinking that came from this. A lot of it was Cleveland-based, I understand, but I just saw a lot of views and opinions on social media and on national TV and from all of these different people that weighed in, because just about everybody did. It was the national story for days. But the whole line of thinking that Mason Rudolph started it and now needs to apologize. Both men were tangled up on the ground, and both men were trying to take their helmets off. So does Mason Rudolph need to apologize for getting a helmet bashed on his head? I don't think so. And the one that got me the most, the funniest one, the line of thinking that got me the most was the excuse that Mason Rudolph went ahead and kicked him in the groin, Miles Garrett. If you look back at the video, at that point he was having his head ripped from his neck. And so the helmet, he had grabbed his helmet, the face mask, Miles Garrett did, and was ripping it off of his head. I think his legs were more flailing in the air because he had a 270-pound man trying to rip off his helmet rather than trying to kick him in the groin. I think that was just a tremendous, tremendous stretch there. Mason Rudolph was, and there was also a line of thinking that he was attacking Garrett whenever Garrett swung his helmet at him. He approached him, and he was screaming, and he definitely could have let it go after he had taken his helmet off, but he was mad. He was angry, and in the end, am I saying that Mason Rudolph is completely innocent in this? Of course he isn't. He did his part to escalate things, and I think when you look at it in totality and step back at the whole thing, and I've reviewed the video 1,000 times, I'm sure you have too, the incident started with Garrett dragging him to the ground well after he got rid of the ball. Late in the game, 21-7, an unnecessary move. The two men escalated the situation in between. Both men went at it, in Garrett and Rudolph, and it ended with Garrett using a helmet as a weapon. So from beginning to end, I think Garrett was the one that initiated the incident. Was Mason Rudolph completely innocent in his role in it? Of course he was not. Does Mason Rudolph need to apologize? I don't think so, although he just might the next time he gets an opportunity. Now, moving it forward, Pouncey's 3-game suspension, I think, is a little harsh. I thought he would get 1 or 2. I think 2 would have been enough just to keep him out of the next Browns game. I think that makes sense to keep him out of that matchup. So 2 games makes sense for me. 3 games, I think, is just a little bit excessive. But hey, it's kind of collateral damage for what happened. He basically blacked out and went after Miles Garrett with everything he had. So I can't be all that upset about the 3-game suspension. And good on the NFL for suspending Garrett for 6 games. And maybe he gets suspended. It's out indefinitely, so it kind of leaves an open door there. But I don't think he gets suspended beyond these 6 games because it is such a nice little bow to end the season where you can just say, all right, he's out for the rest of the year. We got the offseason to kind of calm things down and for him to think about his actions and for him to be punished in that way. And then he gets back in action to begin next year. The only way I see this going into next year is if the Steelers and the Browns play each other within the first, I don't know, 3 weeks, maybe week two, week three, and maybe the first week of the season, and maybe Myles Garrett gets suspended for those games, but I think that's highly unlikely. The bigger question is, how does it impact the playoffs now? With Pouncey out, and with Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster, and James Conner's status up in the air, that is the bigger question coming from all of this that happened on Thursday. And I said coming in last week to that game that it wasn't necessarily a must-win for the Steelers, that they could bounce back from that. The injuries and the suspension to Pouncey, I think, changed the game. There's serious running back and wide receiver issues now that they are dealing with. Benny Snell cannot afford to miss beyond the Bengals game. I still believe they can beat Cincinnati, even despite some of the things that they are dealing with. But the wide receivers are a complete toss-up, and Benny Snell needs to come back after that Bengals game. I don't think he can afford to miss another one, or the Steelers are really going to be hurting in that running back category. And I don't think Mason will be as bad overall over the next few games, but this offense has to do something to be not completely inept like they were against the Cleveland Browns, or else they are in serious, serious trouble. And I'll go over the AFC standings as I move on here on the early morning show, but that's all coming up on the way, as well as a Bears and Rams recap from last night and some overall NFL thoughts from what I observed this past weekend. That's all coming up on the way. It's the early morning show on 93.7 The Fan. It is the early morning show here on 93.7 The Fan. I'm Matt Cole, taking you to about 5:40 before the Fan Morning Show pre-show, and then the Fan Morning Show after that. The guys are at American Natural. No Chris Mack today, but Colin Dunlap and Jim Colony will have you for the Fan Morning Show today, live from American Natural. So that means right now I'm in an empty studio by myself, just looking at enjoying all of these TV screens and no conversation with anybody. Anyway, let's take you through some of the things that happened last night that you may have fallen asleep for, especially if you're up this early. And maybe just a clarification for how I ended that last segment. I still don't think that it was a must win for the Steelers against the Browns, but with the suspensions and the injuries, I still think they can win 9 games. I still think that's a possibility, but it got a whole lot harder than even I anticipated what a loss to the Browns would be because of the losses to Marquise Pouncey and to the status uncertain of Juju Smith-Schuster and Deontay Johnson and, of course, James Conner. So there's that. Okay, Bears and Rams from last night. And this one was, I don't know, if you stayed up for it, congrats, I guess. I don't know if you really wasted your time or not. 17-7 win for the Rams over the Bears. And the Bears just continue to just be pathetic offensively. And it was a Malcolm Brown touchdown that kind of sealed things for the LA Rams.
Brown behind him. They give to Brown straight ahead. He charges in for 6. Touchdown, LA! 3:31 to go in regulation, and the Rams take it back to a 2-score lead.
A couple of things about these two teams. So the LA Rams, they continue to just, I don't know, their offense is just off. It's a way off from last year. I mean, I think Todd Gurley's health has a lot to do with it, but he got 25 carries in this game for 97 yards. And did have a touchdown, and all of a sudden Sean McVay doesn't seem like the creator of all things offense anymore in the NFL, based on how the Rams have played offensively. They're hanging in there in the NFC playoff race. They're 6-4 now after this win over the Bears. And for the other side, for Chicago, in an edition of how'd you screw that up? And I know that I have ripped on Mitch Trubisky before, but he deserves it again. Trading up for the number 2 overall pick to draft Mitch Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes at number 10 and Deshaun Watson at number 12. Oh, it's this decision that keeps getting more and more sad for Chicago. Trubisky last night, 24 of 43, 190 yards, a touchdown and a pick. He threw the ball a lot, but didn't do a whole lot with it when he did throw the ball, and then he left in the fourth quarter with a hip injury. Chase Daniel came in at the end for Chicago, and they fall to 4-6 now. They've been one of the most disappointing teams in the NFL, and it's incredible that Mitch Trubisky was actually an MVP candidate coming into this year from how he has played and how bad he's been. He's been so bad that casinos are offering people who bet on him to be the MVP coming into this season their money back, basically, and giving them bets that worth the odds that are sky high for them to get their money back. It's ridiculous. And he did leave in the fourth quarter with a hip injury. So if you didn't stay up for that late night game of Bears and Rams, didn't miss a whole lot. Rams take care of the Bears 17-7. Coming up next, if you missed some NFL action, maybe you just didn't even watch it yesterday. Maybe you just didn't have the heart for it after what happened on Thursday, or maybe you were busy doing other things. I'll take you through some NFL thoughts from yesterday that I had and what I observed, and a question of the day today that I've seen being floated around amongst Steeler fans and Steeler observers that I'll bring to you to think about throughout the day. That's all coming up. It's the Early Morning Show on 93.7 The Fan. It's the start of a new day, brought to you by Greenbrier Treatment Center, 528 on a Monday morning. It is the Early Morning Show. Just some NFL thoughts from this past weekend and just observing all the action that went on despite the Steelers not playing. And the first, I think, from what stuck out from yesterday, it has to begin and end with the Baltimore Ravens. A 41-7 win over the Houston Texans, a team that right now, or coming into the game, was a division leader of the AFC South at 6-3. And the Ravens just went in and stomped them, just completely stomped them out, didn't give them a chance from the very beginning, complete domination. And let's take inventory of what the Ravens have done here lately. They just beat two top AFC teams by record. So the New England Patriots, 37-20, gave them their first loss of the season. And now the Houston Texans yesterday at 41-7. So two of the past three games, they beat two top AFC teams really handily. Their offense, actually, I think it's getting better. Behind Lamar Jackson, it is getting better as the season goes on. He hasn't gotten hurt yet, for all the people that said that, and he's the MVP candidate of the league so far. And on the other side, what might be more scary, and something that I don't think we have seen, at least it wasn't this way whenever the Steelers first played the Ravens earlier this year, and probably should have won that game outside of a Juju Smith-Schuster fumble, is that this Baltimore defense is legit again. They harassed Deshaun Watson all day long. They now have three above-average to great cornerbacks on that roster, with Marlon Humphrey, Jimmy Smith, and Marcus Peters. And really, the Texans were left with just about no answers yesterday, and Bill O'Brien even said so, the head coach of the Houston Texans, after the game.
It was 14-0, and we tried to stick with the run, but, you know, eventually we had to try to, you know, throw the football and gain positive yards throwing the football, and we just couldn't do much of anything today.
So where do they rank now in the top tier of not just AFC teams, but NFL teams after yesterday and after this weekend? Well, I think the coach has a history of being able to beat New England in the playoffs. I don't think that. I know that. And John Harbaugh. And I think they are the best team in the AFC, but they're not the favorites. So let me try to explain. I think in a vacuum, they're the best team in the AFC. I think if you compare them to New England, you compare them to any other playoff team right now, the Indianapolis and Houston, they're kind of knotted up there. And then Kansas City, I think they're the best team in the AFC when you look at them objectively. But they're not the favorites in that the New England Patriots are still there. They're 9-1. They're still in that playoff picture. And whenever it comes time for the postseason, you cannot say that the New England Patriots are not the favorites to come out of the AFC based on their history. So that's kind of what I mean by that comment. And I think that's where the Baltimore Ravens stand right now. Another observation from the NFL yesterday, and this might kind of be a little bit of a hot take, I guess. Jeff Driscoll, who's now with Detroit, who was formerly with the Cincinnati Bengals, he looked better than Mason Rudolph yesterday. More athletic in getting out of the pocket. He had better pocket presence, for sure, in his game against the Dallas Cowboys. He didn't turn the ball over. I thought he was able to avoid the rush a lot better than Mason Rudolph has been able to do so far. And maybe this is the best way to phrase what I saw from Jeff Driskel, is that I couldn't help but to compare him to Mason Rudolph because he was a backup in for Matt Stafford. Stafford's got a back issue. He's going to be out for multiple weeks now, I think pretty much the rest of the season. Maybe this is the best way to phrase what I saw from Driskel in comparing him to Mason Rudolph, is that he played Mason Rudolph's game better than Mason Rudolph. He managed it. He didn't turn the ball over. He did just enough, made just enough passes down the field and avoided disaster, maybe, better than Mason Rudolph has done, particularly, you know, in Thursday night, but maybe throughout this entire season. I saw more from him than I've seen from Rudolph, which is kind of scary. And also in that game, and another observation that I made, is that Dak Prescott should be and is probably going to get paid because he had another big game and he's put up major stat lines the past two or three games now. He had 444 yards passing, three touchdowns, no picks in this game against Detroit. And it's amazing what an impending contract can help you do. We saw that. We are seeing it with Bud Dupree right now for the Steelers. Whenever guys are playing for that contract, it's amazing what they're capable of. And I think Dak Prescott's doing just that. And I think the Cowboys would be good to pay him what he wants, because he has become just as big of that in that offense as Ezekiel Elliott, for sure. For the rest of the AFC picture that I saw from yesterday, I don't know. The Colts are, I guess, scarier with Jacoby Brissett, and definitely over what Brian Hoyer has done for them. But that win over the Colts from the Steelers is becoming bigger and bigger now, because the Colts are still 6-4, still a game ahead of the Steelers. But if it gets down to a tiebreaker, obviously, the Steelers have that over the Colts. And so they're a scarier team with Jacoby Brissett, but they're not as big of a threat because the Steelers have already taken care of them. I still don't believe in the Bills, even after their 37-20 win over Miami. It's not going to... Winning over at a terrible team like that is not going to convince me that they are for real. I'm just going to continue to watch them to see if they can prove me wrong on that and thinking that they're a fraud. And I definitely think the Raiders are flawed as well. Only a 17-10 win over Cincinnati. They get the win over the Bengals. The Bengals are winless. I mean, come on. And the Raiders are 6-4 now, so they're still a game ahead of the Steelers, but still don't believe in them. And then the Patriots, they never impress, but they always win. 17-10 over the Eagles. They never really blow you away with what they go out there and do against all these teams throughout the season, except for maybe the Steelers in week one. But they never quite impress the way that they have in the past, but they're still winning games. And so they still are, again, the favorites in the AFC, in my opinion. And lastly, in the NFL, and an observation I made yesterday, NFL replay of pass interference, still a complete and massive joke, really. DeAndre Hopkins for the Texans was mauled in the end zone in that Ravens-Texans game, and they reviewed it for pass interference and still didn't overturn the call, which was a no-call pass interference. No way these current rules and no way this replay lasts beyond this year. A complete mess, and continues to be a complete mess in the NFL. A question of the day as I wrap up here on the early morning show. I'm seeing this being floated around social media and saw it throughout the weekend. Should the Steelers sign Terrell Pryor? Terrell Pryor went out on Instagram and said, 9 years in, I'm ready to play for the home crowd. I'm not playing ball unless it's with my home team. Turned down teams weeks ago. Money ain't my motivation. Bringing the chip back here again is. I'm finally healthy. Colbert, let's go. And then he followed that up on Instagram with 10 targets a game. I'll look like a Pro Bowler. Won a game. I'll play the team game, whatever it takes. Do you like the idea of bringing in Terrell Pryor as a receiver to help out the Pittsburgh Steelers? Something to think about throughout the day. For me, I don't know. He didn't show a whole lot from his last how many other teams that he was with. I don't know if he's all that good as an NFL wide receiver. Fan weather is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet, Route 19 in the South Hills. Black Friday's not just one day, it's every day in November at Sun Chevrolet. Today, mainly cloudy and a high of 49, and then tonight, more clouds and a low of 34. Pre-show is next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.